When you deliver a podcast, like what form does that take? It's digital. There's nothing physical there. It's an intangible concept, right? And so how do you illustrate that with the tools that you use, right? Is there any way to show more of the process than just the literal, here I am doing my job? Like if you were a watercolor artist, I wouldn't just show you sitting there with a watercolor paintbrush. I would also want to show you sketching and erasing and mixing your paint colors or sifting through prints that you sell. Like it's so much more than just the literal interpretation. Literally anybody can take a picture of a watercolorist holding a paint brush, but like, would it occur to you to have her sit down and package prints that she's going to sell or that she's going to, you know, send off to the clients? Like, how can we go beyond that?
Hey, welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Hatfield, and each week I interview one of the world's most interesting photographers to learn what it really takes to capture beautiful images so that you can start to do the same. In today's Rewind episode, we are chatting with personal branding photographer Abby Grace about transforming your photography from generic to captivating by focusing on storytelling through strategic imagery. But first, the Beginner Photography Podcast is brought to you by CloudSpot. Simplify your business with studio management. Organize clients, send professional contracts, automate invoice payments, and more. Keeping track of everything just got a whole lot easier. Grab your free forever account over at deliverphotos.com and only upgrade when your business is ready. So today's guest, Abby Grace, she has this ability, I think, to explain things such as storytelling in your images and building connections and, you know, how to best prepare in such like a fun and like a can-do way that I think is infectious. She's going to make you want to like just throw off your headphones or, I don't know, rip out your speakers in your car just so that you can run out and get to work shooting. Today, you are going to learn how to put the people in front of your lens at ease and how to ensure that they have a great time, of course, how to create images that tell a compelling story that align with your subject's vision, and how to create better compositions through her unique layering technique. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview with Abby Grace. So Abby, my first question for you is, when did you know that photography was going to play an important role in your life?
Yeah. So it was, I was in college. It was my junior year, second half of my junior year. And I took a darkroom class and I'd always wanted to take one. I just thought the concept of photography was really cool. And I wanted to be able to take cute photos of my friends. So I took a darkroom class and there was something magical about learning how to shoot film and learning how like aperture and ISO and shutter speed all interacted with one another without being able to see the results on an LCD screen. So like almost, it wasn't guess and check. It was make an informed estimate and then go to the darkroom and see what happened. And I fell in love. So like 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night, all my other friends were out partying. I was in the dark room because I just could not get enough. I actually made myself allergic to developer and fixer. I spent so much time handling the chemicals that now like my skin flares up if I were to touch the chemicals.
No.
Yeah, but like there was something that just captivated me. And it was, I think part of it was, this is something I'm good at and I like it for me, not because someone has told me, oh, you're good at that, you should pursue it, or you could do a lot with that. You know, that could be a strategic move for you. It was just like, I loved photography and I loved it for me and not because anyone else told me I should. And then realizing like, oh, I think I might actually be pretty good at this. And so I had a conversation with my professor, Kathleen Linkus at Radford University. And I was like, do you think like I could make a go at this? And she was like, yeah, I do. And it was enormously impactful, like how much time she took to review my portfolio and like the encouraging feedback I got from her. And then I realized that I really liked stalking people's wedding pictures on Facebook. Like I would go to like a weird length to see like, oh, that person, I commented on someone's profile and like, it looks like their cousin also commented. And I think their cousin's bio photo might be a wedding dress. And maybe they have wedding pictures that I could look at. And then I realized I could marry those two. So it was like halfway through my senior year. And I was like, should I change my major to photography? And my parents were like, absolutely not. Because I was majoring in communications with concentration in PR at the time. And so I finished my degree and knew when I graduated that I wanted to be a photographer, but I also knew that I didn't have any kind of, there was absolutely nothing for me to start a business with. So I spent a year apprenticing under another photographer. And after 2 years in the corporate world, I left and I went full time. That was almost 10 years ago. So it's been bananas. I don't shoot weddings anymore, but that's how it started off.
Wow. So I got a few questions for you just based on that right there. I'm always interested in that discovery of photography in the first place, because there has to be there has to be a reason why we get into this thing, you know, why we love this. So when you chose to take that darkroom class, and you said you just wanted to take pretty photos of your friends and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm thinking 10, 12 years ago, there was still digital photography was around. Like, why would you pursue that rather than, I don't know, just continuing to take, like, let me restart. Why did you decide to dive deeper into photography past just taking snapshots of friends?
Well, so I had bought a digital camera. It was, the summer of 2008. I bought a Nikon D40 with a kit lens, and I was so excited. I used some inheritance money from my grandfather, and like inheritance sounds really bougie. It was my money that I was using to live off of when I was in college. And I had enough left that I could buy this camera, and I found a good deal on it. And I bought it on July 4th. And I don't know what it was that made me, I've always loved people. I've always been a people person. I'm a huge extrovert. I think the concept of how humans interact with one another is fascinating. I'm actually writing a new posing lesson for our students inside Brand Photography Academy. And it's not starting with like, okay, what are the poses for brand photographers that work best? It's like, no, let's start with the psychology of human interaction. Like, let's talk about how like your shoulder position communicates maybe something subconscious that you weren't even thinking about, and like how you can use that to your advantage, or maybe beware, like for women, like, that, like your shoulder pop like this, it's actually a flirtatious thing. I think that's fascinating. And so like I was studying communication in college, and like my favorite course was interpersonal communication. And so I think maybe the camera was just a way for me to magnify and like document the, like the deeper side of humans beyond just like what you see in a passing face in a crowd or in a classroom, to like get to know someone using photography.
Wow. That's a whole lot deeper than I was expecting, than most go. I love that. So you get the camera, right? You get this D40. Did you just throw it straight in auto? Did you go into manual?
Oh, yeah.
You straight in auto. Okay.
I think it was Ken Rockwell makes the like manuals that are kind of like, they're way more intuitive than the like manual that comes with your camera. And my grandfather had pointed me towards that. And so I bought the one for the D40, and I remember sitting at basketball games, cause I was in the pep band. That was really cool. And I was in the pep band, and I remember bringing my D40 with me along with this Ken Rockwell booklet. And this was before I had taken the darkroom class. So this was like literally just like, what's aperture? And him explaining, oh, when you open the aperture, that the depth of field decreases. And so you'll see more blur in the background. And I remember fiddling with that. And I was like, it's, nothing's changing. Well, because my camera was still on auto. Nothing was changing. But I remember that like discovery process of like, what does like the mechanics of photography, and being very confused by it until I took the darkroom class.
Because when shooting in film, everything was going to be full manual, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you can't change your ISO. So that's not a factor anymore. Like you either put 400 speed film in your camera or you don't. Like there's like that wasn't a variable that I had. I mean, it was a variable, but it was a variable that was constant for 36 exposures. So I wasn't having to worry about flipping that from scene to scene.
So when you did start, so shooting in film was really the first time that you started to tackle shooting in manual and taking control over your settings and whatnot.
Yeah.
Aside from starting from the beginning and learning all of it, right? That's a huge mountain. What was there anything in particular that you found to be a struggle to be able to capture the images that you wanted to? If you're ready to turn your lens towards a profitable future, but are unsure how to stand out in a competitive market, well, then I've got just the solution for you. I'm thrilled to offer you exclusive access to our free video training called Maximizing Mini Sessions. It's put on by the legendary duo Philip and Eileen Bloom. This video webinar is designed specifically for photographers like you who are eager to learn the art of effective marketing and promotion and who want to start earning money with your camera. This isn't about just taking great photos. It's about making sure the right people see them. Discover the power of mini sessions, the secret of promoting them, not just to get noticed, but to truly stand out. Learn the best timing and tactics to catch your audience's eye and get them in front of the camera. So if marketing has been your stumbling block, then wait no more. Visit beginnerphotopod.com/mini to sign up for your free video training now. It's time to put your photography in the spotlight where it belongs.
I think at first I was struggling, like I really wanted to capture pretty things. And I was like, well, I'll point my camera at brides. Brides are pretty, right? And I think that there was I didn't understand why I was drawn to that. Like, I just knew like it's pretty, I was taking the literal, like, I like this, therefore I should shoot this. I like pretty things, therefore I should shoot pretty things. As opposed to like, what is it about that beauty that attracts me? Is it the story of redemption of meeting my own husband and wanting to capture that for other people? Was it truly just an aesthetic thing? Because I feel like that can only get you so far for so long. Like, where is that deeper attraction? Like, why weddings? Why brides? Is it the innocence? Is it the joy? Is it the party? Is it the florals? Like, what is it? And like not realizing that was something because for so long I was only coming at it from the aesthetic. Like, I like pretty things. I'm going to point my camera at pretty things, which are brides and flowers. But like that, you can only shoot so many bouquets of pink peonies before right. It starts to get boring. If you're not committed to something deeper than that, then the surface level aesthetic is only going to take you so far before you get bored and you want to move on. It's got to be more substantial than that. I mean, as photographers, sometimes we have to make choices about like what we choose, what kind of work we choose to do, because we need to pay our bills. But like, as an artist, you know this, it's hard work owning your own business. And if you're not in it for something more substantial than just a paycheck, like oftentimes an easier answer is to just go get a job for somebody else. You don't have to worry about EIN numbers. And like, did you file your quarterly estimate? So I think that search for like, what am I really doing here? Why am I really doing this? I am a person who approaches, you and I were talking before we started recording, like I approach anything I do with a high commitment to excellence. And so if I can't do it excellently, I don't want to do it, because I know whatever I'm doing, like the photographs I'm taking, those are just a representative of something else. So what do they represent? And I think finding that answer and struggling to find it, like that was tough. And I didn't realize what I was looking for.
So what did it take for you to find that answer? And what is that answer?
Yeah, I think it was when I realized, I was talking to my dad and he had a picture of him and my mom on their wedding day as the background of his phone. And it like clicked, like, oh, this is the reminder of the woman that he committed to, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in good times and in bad. And like this photo was a daily visual, like almost visceral reminder of that commitment that he continues to pursue. Love can just as much be a choice as it is a feeling. It is an action as well as a feeling. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to help people focus on what matters most through their wedding photographs. And like what matters most on the wedding day isn't the exact combination of color palette that you use or the flowers. It is the moments between humans that remind us of why we were here in the first place.
That's beautiful. But weddings, okay, actually, hold on. I got one question before we move on. And that was the whole, you know, you went to school for PR. Parents said, don't do photography. You said, you know what, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm always interested in that decision right there. When you go to school for something and then decide, no, there's something about photography that I love so much that I want to pursue this above anything else. What was that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was just the unadulterated like passion and joy that the hours in the dark room were massive. There were so many hours in the dark room and I felt like I was in a flow state when I was there. That like, I didn't necessarily like communication felt like, yeah, I'm good at this. Like I can do this. I don't have any doubt that I could go get a job in comms and be great. But like, there's nothing like on fire in me when I'm writing a press release versus like when I walk out to take a camera, like I walk out on campus with my camera or I walk into the dark room to develop there's like an excitement and a joy that I haven't found in anything else that I've done. yeah, I think it was just, it was that like, this is mine. And I'm good at this. And not only am I good at it, I love it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, my parents were terrified. They weren't like anti-photography. They were just like, no, you can't change your major because sure. that's going to be like an extra 2 years of school. And also, no, you cannot get a fine art degree. Like you're almost done. You're 6 months away from graduating. Just finish. And it wasn't like a realistic, like, should I actually change my major? It was just like a fleeting thought in the back of my mind. And my dad was like, yeah, hard pass. No. Yeah. I think it was just this discovery of like something that was mine. And that like, I was unquestionably good at, I mean, I wasn't amazing at it at first, but it was like, there's a talent here that could be cultivated and grown. And there's also like, I also really love people. And this is a really cool way for me to marry my love of people with this like art form that I've always been an artistic person. Like I wanted so badly in elementary school to be a good draw. Like I took a couple of drawing classes. I was horrible at them. Yeah. And so photography was the first art form that I felt like, oh, this is how I've had this creative desire for so long. And I did music all the way through college. Like, so there was, it was met in that capacity in some ways, but like photography was the first like visual art that I felt like I could express myself and express what I was trying, what was in my head. I could put it on paper in a way that I couldn't do with like paint or pencils.
Mm-hmm. I love that. The idea of, you know, knowing yourself enough to, I guess, bet on yourself and where you want to be in your future. That's huge that I think a lot of people just suppress inside. So again, thank you for sharing that and hopefully giving somebody some inspiration to do the same if they're in a similar situation. But we got to the point to where we're shooting weddings. You're now done with this. And today you're shooting what?
Branding. So I'm a brand photographer for high performing creative small business owners. So I come in, let's say I don't typically work with new business owners just because the intensity and the rate of what I do is high enough that it's typically not accessible to new small business owners. And I will also, more than that, it's typically not a good fit for new small business owners because they're still figuring out what they want their brand to be about.
Sure.
And so I'm working with established businesses who small businesses, creative small businesses like artisans and wordsmiths, calligraphers, copywriters. I have a client who's a Facebook ads expert, like people who work with their brain in a really creative way and also often with their hands. And then I come in and I put visuals to their messaging. So like whatever it is, their message, their, you know, collection of messages that they are distributing to their audience, I put photographs to those to help their words line up with their visuals.
Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit. So where did this come about? You love photographing pretty things. Brides, you know, pretty things. And now branding. Where did that start?
Yeah. So it was an accident.
like many things Natalie, in photography.
Yeah. So Natalie Frank is a dear friend of mine and she was making the pivot from wedding photography into more like community leadership and writing and speaking. And this was in 2016. So she was like, hey, I'm working on a new website with Jen Olmsted of Tonic Site Shop, and I need some new photos done for my website. And she and I both thought you would be the perfect fit. And I was like, why? Like, why would you ask me? All right. Like, if you want me to, that's fine. I think I charged her like $500 for a full day shoot because I was just like, whatever. It's just like between friends. And I showed up And I shot it exactly like I would a wedding day. Like, what time do I need to be there? Where do I need to be? Okay, I'll show up and hope that the Pinspiration Fairy graces me with her presence and I'll just create something pretty on set. And it was beautiful. The photographs were beautiful, but they were not purposeful. And that didn't bug me at first because I was like, these are so cute. These are going to do super well on Instagram. And they did. And then it was so weird. So I guess Jasmine Starr saw the photos because then we got an inquiry from a real estate agent in our area. And she said, hello, yes, Jasmine Starr referred me to you. And I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Like, where does that come from?
Can we flash back to the 2011 Abby who would be flipping out right now? So I shot for her. And then more inquiries started to slowly trickle in because people saw that I was doing this and branding photography was kind of becoming a thing. And as brand photography started to pick up speed, I was looking around me and seeing all these other photographers who were calling like, oh, I shot these brand photos for someone. And like, really all it was just a collection of someone smiling at a MacBook Pro. Like, here I am smiling at my laptop. Here I am clutching my cute Anthropology mug. You can tell they're brand photos because I'm tucking my hair behind my ear and laughing at the camera. And I was like, these are so boring. Like, it's just the same thing over and over again in these brand photos, which were intended to help our clients stand out and connect with their people, are actually just making them blend in because it's more of the same garbage being regurgitated into the social media atmosphere. And like, it's blurring into the background of the scroll. And like, I think I can do better than this. I think the reason I hate this is because I know I can do better. And so I started thinking like slowly this mindset shift started to happen of like, oh, brand photography requires a totally different mindset than like weddings or families or just like lifestyle portraits. Like you have to, in order to be an effective brand photographer, you have to think like a marketer and a strategist. And like, I'm a good marketer. It's like one of the things that's been an unintentional side of our business for a long time. I've always loved that side of things. And then when I combine that like understanding of brand theory and that love for marketing and understanding like human nature and being a good photographer, good people photographer from all those years of weddings, it was like everything came together at one time and people started inquiring because they recognized something before I did that like this was different. Like this girl was doing something different. Like nobody else was producing work like this in the industry. And that's why it stands out because it's marketing minded, strategic brand photography, as opposed to a portrait session of somebody sitting at their desk and like clacking on their keyboard. And so it was an accident. Like it was other people recognizing something in me and then me realizing like, oh my gosh, the reason I love this and the reason I'm good at this is because this is a perfect coming together of all of my gifts.
So if recently I work with a company and they asked for a headshot of me at my computer podcasting and I thought, okay, I got to do this.
Get on my tripod.
You're right. I got the tripod. I got the app open so that I could, you know, remote take the photo and whatnot. But what is a better branding photo than just somebody at a computer?
Yeah. Well, so sometimes we have to have those literal pictures. Like I'm a photographer. Here I am holding my camera. Like I think that there are some like kind of cliche, but like also usable images of like, hey, this is the about page on my website. Maybe it's not the first impression you've ever had of me, but like, here's the about page and you scroll down. It's got some fun facts about me or some more information about like how to work with me. And there's a picture of me like with a camera. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, those are sometimes necessary. I actually have a client coming up a couple months who was like, we don't want to do any of the office imagery. And I was like, yeah, but you kind of need those because we're doing a clean sweep for them. Like I'm coming in and taking a whole new suite of photographs and they're going to not use pretty much any of their old photographs. And so I was like, you kind of need those like hands on the keyboard, a hand on a mouse images that are like not as exciting, but they're almost like stock imagery. Mm-hmm. So like those are helpful to have, but those should not be the only thing that we're shooting. How do we take, because sometimes like, okay, podcasting, when you deliver a podcast, like what form does that take? It's digital. Yes. There's nothing physical there. It's an intangible concept, right? And so how do you illustrate that with the tools that you use, right? So I think that the photo of you sitting at the desk with the podcast, like that's an okay photo to take, but then like, how do we then take that to the next level to show the ideation process of like, what does it look like when you're mapping out several seasons worth of podcasts or when you're sourced, like, do you have like a collection of mics that have, you know, you started with like a Yeti Blue mic and then you graduated to the Shure mic and then you got whatever the fancy one is that you've got now, like, can we show, like, is there any way to show more of the process than just the literal, here I am doing my job? Like, if you were a watercolor artist, I wouldn't just show you sitting there with a watercolor paintbrush. I would also want to show you sketching and erasing and mixing your paint colors and maybe like thumbing through your favorite coffee table book that served as a source of inspiration for you, or sifting through prints that you sell. Like, it's so much more than just the literal interpretation of, like, how can we go beyond that? Because that's where things start to stand out. Literally anybody can take a picture of a watercolorist holding a paintbrush, but like, would it occur to you to have her sit down and package prints that she's going to sell, or that she's going to, you know, send off to the clients? Like, how can we go beyond that?
So this is going to sound like a strange question, but who cares? Like, why, right? Like, why are we going deeper into this?
Because there's so much noise on the social media landscape that, like, just having the cliche photo is not enough to stand out anymore. Is it enough for your about page? Sure. But the point of social media is you want to stop the scroll. You want to stop, you want to interrupt people in what they're doing, whether on like Facebook or Instagram. And you can do that with an eye-catching visual that's like, that's different. I'm not like, what are they trying to convey there? Like, one of my clients, Ashlyn Carter, she's a copywriter for creatives. She's the copywriter for creatives. And she, like, one of the things I love about working with her is that what she does is very intangible. She's a copywriter. She works with words. She doesn't publish books. All of her stuff is digital. So how do we take this intangible concept of, like, copywriting for a sales page or outlining a new course or being interviewed for a podcast? Because that's something that she does a lot. How do we take that concept, that intangible concept, and put tangible visuals to it so that people understand right away, oh, this is what she does. Like, copywriter for creatives, what does that mean? But then you look at the photographs on her website and you're like, I immediately understand.
Can you describe what some of those photos are for those who are jogging or in the car?
Yeah. So, like, one of the most noteworthy and imitated photographs from Ashlyn's session was her sitting on the ground with, like, sticky notes and paper all over the wall, outlining a new course. And that was like 3 years ago. That photo's been done a lot since then. But, like, that was the one that I think it was like, oh, things have really clicked, not just for me, but for my people. Cause they look at that and they're like, that something's different about that. So sitting on the floor, outlining a new course, or so Ashlyn talks about, like, she has a course, copywriting for creatives, and copywriting for creatives is like how to write your own copy for your website in a compelling way that iterates your brand message. And, like, no, your work doesn't speak for itself, right? So your words need to help tell the same story. And so one of the photographs I took was of Ashlyn dropping a piece of crumpled up paper into a trash can. So to accompany, like, hey, write words that don't suck. Like, come learn from me, copywriting for creatives. I'm trying to think of some of the other one. The last time I shot for her, we were trying to illustrate this concept of, like, wireframing out a website, of, like, not just a website, a sales page. So, like, what kind of copy does the sales page need to have on it? But then, like, what's the order of magnitude? How should those be distributed? What size should they be? So I had her take a huge, you know, post-it, like 20x30-inch piece of paper, and something that she would have otherwise done in a Google Doc, we did on a piece of paper on the wall.
Okay. So that's a great visual representation, you know, of what somebody does. And I get how those photos kind of tie everything together, right? Give you a fuller picture of who somebody is and what they can do for somebody else. But getting to that point, is there a lot of preparation beforehand to figure out what photos you should even be taking?
Yes, there's so much research. And that's one of the things that I love the most about. And this is one of the biggest hurdles that's for people, because typically what we see inside our course, Brand Photography Academy, is our target audience is wedding and portrait photographers who are either looking to diversify or they want an off-ramp from their industry. And brand photography is like, if you're interested in brand photography, I can teach you how to do that really well. And so the reason I say that is, oh my gosh, I just totally spaced. What was the original question? No, it was the prep. You were asking about the prep. So, but this was like, the reason I say all of that is not to be like Brand Photography Academy, but the reason I say that is because one of the biggest pieces that, like, mindset shift in our students is that you cannot just show up and like wait for the Pinspiration Fairy to arrive on set. Like it's the difference between weddings and family. Like not that there's not to say that there's not prep with weddings and family portraits, but with brand photography, there's a ton of research that goes on beforehand so that by the time you get to the shoot, you can tell me what you're going to shoot, where you're going to shoot it, why you're shooting it, and how you're going to shoot it. Like all before you ever get there. Whereas on wedding days, I would show up and be like, do I roughly know like where we're going to shoot portraits? Yes. Do I know exactly which pictures I'm going to take? No, like I'll do it when I get there. Mm-hmm. With brand photography, because we're not just trying to capture a relationship. We're trying it's the difference between like relational documentation and concept creation. So not just showing up and being like, let's take some pictures as evidence of the fact that these two people fell in love and maybe some nuances about their relationship. This is, what am I trying to tell you about there's an active message I'm trying to communicate with this photograph. What is that message? And how can we tell that message in a way that clicks with our audience super fast? Our brains process visuals 60,000 times faster than they process text. And so are you saying within that frame what it is that you're trying to say? Because if you just wait until you get on set and hope that things come together, you're going to find yourself coming up short. So I would say there's five layers to any solid brand photograph. The first and foremost is your background, your backdrop. Second is your background details. So like artwork that you might have in the background or like desk tchotchkes or like storytelling elements in the back of the photograph. And if you imagine this like layers 1 through 5, starting at 5, like the furthest away from the screen coming towards you. So 5 is layer 1 is the backdrop. Layer 2 is the background details, background accessories. Layer 3 is your outfit. What is your clothing telling your viewer about your business? Layer 2 is foreground details. So like, what are you interacting with? You have a laptop with you? Are you writing in a notebook? Are you styling something? And then the last one is pose, action, and expression. And so a solid brand photograph is not just a matter of showing up and being like, well, hope we find something pretty, but it's a concentrated effort ahead of time to make sure all five of those layers are telling the story that your client needs to tell. Because typically the problem with brand, when someone comes to me, is like, I need brand photographs. They have a problem, right? And I have a solution that I can offer them. And this is a basic question that any photographer should be able to answer. What problem are you solving with your product? Mm-hmm. What solution? What is your solution? What desire are you meeting? If you don't like the word problem, you can say desire. What desire are you meeting? But like the problem that my clients have in some way, shape, or form is that there is a disconnect between their intentions for the brand and their audience's perception of the brand. That's typically why people find me. My repeat clients, the problem is I run out of photographs and I need more. But the initial, like what brought you to me is I'm having trouble connecting my intention with their perception. And so those five layers are opportunities for you to connect intention with perception by making sure you're telling the story that needs to be told and that there isn't any incongruencies like throughout those layers. So like, if you're telling me, oh, I'm a high-end wedding photographer for New York City brides, but you shoot your session in like a Southern house and like you're wearing clothes from like H&M or Forever 21, which like there's nothing wrong with that, but like, do high-end brides in New York City, are they shopping in H&M? Probably right, not. Right. The problem, like, does the very material that you put on your body, is that speaking to telling the same story that you want to connect with, the reinforcing the message that you're trying to communicate with the photograph? So this is a very long answer, sorry, but like the question of, is there prep? Yes, because when we prep well, it means we storytell well, because we're not just relying on showing up and hoping that those elements come together on their own. This is the difference between weddings and branding. It's like, you can control those. You can tell your client, hey, I know you want to shoot at your house. Just from the photos and videos that you sent me, I really don't think this is going to tell the story you wanted to tell. So let's look at renting an Airbnb or Vrbo or like Peerspace or something that can really speak to the client that you're trying to reach. And so that background layer of your house isn't actually detracting from the message you're trying to communicate with your photographs.
Wow. Okay. So at some
point, so much there.
There is. And I really appreciate all of the, there was a lot of, tactical information there that we can use. So obviously the prep, and I think you just kind of breezed over this right there, which is like, hey, I need photos and videos of your house so that we can make sure that this location works. So, I mean, are you sending out, you're sending out questionnaires, your...
Yeah. So we have multi, there's like that, the whole research process is like multi-step, right? So it begins from the contact form that they send us. Like, I mean, you can go to my website and look at, see what we ask on our contact form if you want to. But like, we're asking, they're like, hey, what are your like top three goals in the next six to 12 months? Because what I shoot for them should directly support those goals. So if they tell me I'm launching a podcast, we're going to shoot for their podcast. If they tell me I'm launching a course, or I'm adding associates, or I'm expanding my business, I'm based in LA and I'm going to expand to New York. Great. Maybe we should shoot your brand photos in New York. Like, those, like, the from the very beginning, that detail collection process begins. So we have our initial contact form, and then on the consult, I have like a whole consult roadmap that I take people through to ask me questions, to ask them questions to help further flesh out my understanding of their brand and how I can help. Like, what holes are we looking to fill? Where is that disconnect between your intention and their perception? And then from the consult call, then we send them a client welcome guide that has some proactive information. But then I also send them a pre-shoot questionnaire that kicks off my research process. Then we have a strategy call about a month before the shoot. And like, I'm doing a ton of research there of like, what does your existing collection of photographs look like? What kind of holes are we looking to fill on your website, your sales page, your funnels, your opt-in pages? And then like, what is your market currently? Like, what are your competitors using? Great. Let's not do any of that. And I want to source our inspiration from somewhere else so that we're coming up with fresh content that again, helps you stand out. So like, that pre-shoot call is really just like, hey, these are the storylines that I'm thinking we should use as a jumping off point for your shoot to guide my shot list. Does that sound good with you? Great. Let's talk through logistics, make sure everybody's on board with like where we're going to be, what the timeline's going to be. And then I write a shot list. All the wedding photographers, please don't close your ears. It's not a dirty four-letter word. Shot lists are like the most crucial tool that I have with me on a shoot day. Like, it's more important than my camera, is the shot list, because that shot list is my proactive creativity of like, what are they trying to say? What photos are going to help them say that? So then I'm not I'm not relying on inspiration to strike in the moment. I can be proactively creative so that when there's room and margin on the shoot day, creativity can breathe, but I'm not relying on that to show up.
That was actually going to be my next question is, you know, obviously with this much planning, how much room do you have for, you know, capturing what is just naturally there, what comes up, these little happy accidents. Yeah. And I think that does it perfectly. So, I'm always interested in knowing, you know, we can prepare as much as we can beforehand. And, you know, during the shoot, we have a lot that we can control. But after the shoot, how do you judge whether it went well or it didn't go well?
That's a great question. I mean, typically my clients are like, oh my gosh, these are amazing. Like, I can't wait to post these everywhere. And like, typically a job well done looks like they put the photographs everywhere. There's like a clean sweep they do on their website, or sometimes my clients are working, they're in the midst of like a website relaunch. That's actually often the case. They're working on a new website. And so it takes a couple months for the photographs to come out, but a job well done means those photos are everywhere. Every once in a while we have clients who don't put their photos to full use. And it does make me wonder, like, did I not do the job that they needed me to do? We send out a post-shoot questionnaire after every session to ask, like, hey, what did you like? What could have been improved? Do you have any extra feedback for me? I had a really humbling moment a couple of months ago where we had a client who I sent her previews and she didn't respond for 2 days, which is normally like, it's not that big of a deal, but I was like, that's a little weird. Like, I would have expected some, I would have just based on them, I would have expected to hear back from them. And when I did hear back from them, she was so kind. She was like, I don't think this is a reflection of you. I think that this is just my personal insecurities, but like, I hate the way I look in these photographs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, the worst case scenario. Like, right. You just spent thousands of dollars on this shoot and you hate your photographs and you're not going to use any of them. Yeah. And so, in that moment, like, I was like, okay, my number one goal is for you to be able to get maximum usage out of these images. This was a full day shoot. It was a lot of time off your calendar to prep for this. Like, I'm willing to reshoot this if we need to, if it came down to the fact that I did not do a good job for you. I don't think that's the issue here. So let's try a couple different things before we go to reshoot, before we go to the like reshoot option.
Yeah.
And it turns out my editing was off. Like the preset that I use for most of my clients, it wasn't a good fit for her skin tone. It made her look washed out and like removed the warmth from her skin. And once I fixed that, she was thrilled with the photographs. But like that, I haven't heard back from you in a couple of days after I sent your preview. Something's up. I never want to let things die there, because if something's not right, I want to make it right. How can I make you thrilled with these photographs so that you're happy, but that so that when you depart from me, that we can do so with you continuing to want to recommend me? Because right. Like 75% of our clients are booked based on referral. If it doesn't go well, the solution there is to find out why and what can I do to make that right. But going back to your original question of the litmus test of how can you tell if it went well, did they put their photographs everywhere?
Gotcha. And that makes sense. I mean, obviously, if somebody's going to invest in something like this, and if they don't post those photos, that can be a bit of a red flag.
Yeah.
I missed a question I was thinking about before we get to the point of delivery and where they're on set. I know that, you know, as somebody who has photographed many brides, couples, I'm sure that you got often, we're worried about feeling uncomfortable in front of the camera, you know?
Yeah.
Do you get the same hesitation working with creative entrepreneurs?
There's some of that. I would actually say most of my clients are like, I don't like being photographed, but it's a necessity. Like, this is an investment that I'm making for my business in the same way. I don't like doing my taxes. I mean, I would hope that this would be more fun than doing your taxes.
You almost made me spill out my tea there. Yeah.
It always is more fun. But for some of my clients, it really is like, I'm doing this because I know I need to, not necessarily because I want to. Where it's like, I love having my photo taken. I think it is so fun. I like, can't wait to have brand photos taken again. But I know that that anxiety is real. And it's more of like, I'm here to do my job, not necessarily for you to document this like joyful day. Mm-hmm. So I always tell my clients the exact same thing. I told all my wedding clients the same, because often like you have grooms that would show up with like a similar attitude of like, sure, I'm here because I know I need to be.
Yeah.
And so you try to make it fun for them and you encourage them and you tell them how great they look. But I start every session off the same way. Like, just so you know, if you're nervous, totally normal. The first 15 minutes of any portrait session are always awkward. Like the whole like Ricky Bobby, like, what do I do with my hands? So like, don't worry, I'm going to make you look great. Like, it's not up to you to perform. I'm going to pose you in a way that's flattering and I'm going to tell you exactly what to do. So the pressure's not on you. You just have to show up and follow direction. That's all you have to do. And that typically helps. It is still nerve wracking for them for the first like 15 minutes. I actually had a client take a shot of tequila before I sent him one time.
That'll calm the nerves.
But I think just like being very affirmative, or affirming helps go a long way, in addition to that disclaimer. And I'll sometimes use myself as an example. Like, I'm the same way. Like, when we have family pictures taken, all my common sense goes out the window. I'm like, does this look natural? If you can make them laugh, great. But that disclaimer by being like, yo, it's totally fine. Everyone, because there, I think the fear comes from like, I'm the only one who feels this way. No, you're not. Everyone feels that way. And it's okay.
Yeah. I use the, I say, unless your last name is Kardashian, nobody feels really comfortable in front of a camera and it's totally normal. So just,
that's
go
a good
ahead
one. I like that
enjoy
line.
Enjoy it. I want to know, when you think back to those earliest photos, right? Because as photographers who have been in it for a while, the goal obviously is to continue to get better. We learn something new, we put that into practice, we get better, process continues. When you go back and look at your earliest photos, right? As difficult as it may be sometimes, what are some of the elements that tell you that stand out as, wow, this is an amateur photo. I've come a long way since then.
Because I was already a very good photographer by the time I started shooting brands. So I look at that work and I'm really like, really what's matured is the content inside the frame, not the mechanics of how that photograph was made. So I'm not really looking at lighting. I already knew how to use lighting. I'm not looking at exposure because I was already good at that. So it's really like, wow, my storytelling capacity has skyrocketed. Because I look at the earliest photographs and I'm like, what do these mean? They don't mean anything. Like, they don't. Like, there was a super cute photograph that I took of Natalie during my first brand shoot. She was wearing this adorable pink blazer. Like, if I posted that photograph on Instagram today, it would still get like a lot of likes. Mm-hmm. But she has her arms like over her body and she's holding her laptop down in front of her torso and she's looking down and it's cute, right? What does it mean? Like, what are we trying to say with that photograph? There was another photo from the same session. And I will say all this, this is not a criticism of anyone other than me, because I was the one driving the train at this session. And Natalie was like, I'm happy to show up and do whatever you want me to do. And like, again, those photographs were beautiful and she got a lot of use out of them, but they weren't purposeful. So like, for example, one of the scenes that I shot was like a white watering can with tulips in the back of it. That's not where tulips grow. That's not how watering cans work. None of that is accurate. And Natalie's not a gardener. Like, why did we do that? So I think when I look back at the old photographs, it's the same criticism that I have for brand photographers who are, they're doing the smiling at a laptop thing. They are either taking a very literal interpretation of their client's job. I'm a watercolor artist. You can tell because here I am holding a watercolor brush versus a more nuanced like insight into not just the product that they create, but the process and the personality. And like, well, how can we use these photographs to promote this, the client's business? So that lack of nuance, I think, and the obvious, like, here I am, like literal interpretation of a job. But then also just the default, I think that was like, I never realized how much of a default photographer I was, relying on inspiration to occur in the moment. And if it didn't, defaulting back to the safe photograph of my client smiling at a 15.5 inch square of silver, or like my clients like writing in a notebook or like holding a cute mug, like the ones that are safe, like very, very safe photography, which might be able to book you like a few sessions, but like, does it actually do anything to help your clients stand out? And furthermore, does it do anything to help you stand out as a brand photographer? I would argue that it doesn't. Put that in an audiogram. Yeah.
I just know I got to write down that time there. No, it's always interesting to me because, you know, I think brand photography is a world that I don't know anything about. And I think if, as I told you earlier, when I had to take that podcast photo, it's like, that was the photo that I took, just me in front of a computer.
Well, to be fair, that's what they asked you for. So like, you were just giving the people what they asked
that's
for.
That's true. But I could have elevated it. I could have made it better. Are there any maybe simple questions that we could ask ourselves if we're just getting into brand photography? How do we add? I mean, you gave us the five layers of, you know, branding photo. Is there any questions that maybe we can ask ourselves to maybe get us more into that headspace of how do we add more context into this photo that's more than just a coffee mug or a MacBook?
Yeah. I mean, like, does this look real? Does this feel believable or not?
Right.
Like, does, I'm really glad you guys can't see my desk right now because it's a freaking mess. Like, they've got two hard drives here. I've got some vitamins, like a couple candles, some medicine, a mouse, and also a pen cup. So when you go to a brand shoot and you're like, here's the client's perfectly clean desk with their MacBook and their pen, there's like one pen and one notebook and the rest of it's clean. I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't believe you. Like, unless you live in a restoration hardware catalog, like that's not what your actual desk looks like. So let's put a little bit, does this feel real or not? And I think this is one of those things. This is another headspace where like wedding and family photographers have to make a pivot. Mindset wise is weddings, everything has to look perfect, right? Like how long do we spend photographing the bridal details, getting the perfect flat lay, fixing her dress so that it looks as picture perfect as possible, because that's what the wedding industry wants. That's not necessarily what your branding clients want. These photographs, if we're photographing something that's meant to feel behind the scenes, make it look behind the scenes. We don't need perfect. We need purposeful. And so if you approach with this attitude of perfection, what you're actually doing is distancing your client from their audience because you just made their work setup look unrelatable and unbelievable. And that doesn't serve them. So instead, like, what could you add back into the scene? Like, okay, yeah, you've got your desktop, you've got your white desk, you've got your MacBook. Do they have a keyboard? Do they have a mouse? Is there a candle that they use? Don't just put a notebook on the desk. Like, put a notebook and a book and some crumpled up like paper or like something to make it look like if you were actually shooting them at work, what would this desk actually look like?
Again, this is one of those where it's like, I love talking to people like you because it's like, you know, obviously what's going on. And I don't know anything about branding photography. Like, this is a whole new world to me. And I feel like we could probably go on and I could dive deeper for the next like 2 hours.
Yep.
But I really want to be mindful of your time.
And also your listeners' time.
And of course, their time as well, right? Before I let you go, is there anything maybe that I didn't ask you today that you want to make sure that listeners know about brand photography and just getting the best that they can?
Yeah. So one of the questions you always get is like, how do I start to market this with at the beginning? Like, how do I get new clients? Okay. So the best way, and this is another difference between weddings and branding that I love, is like weddings, like you could go and shoot a styled shoot, but like everyone kind of knows it's a styled shoot, right? Or you could go and second shoot for someone else, but maybe you can't use the photographs or the ones that you got, like maybe it wasn't exactly what you wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. With branding clients, you do not have to wait for clients to come to you before you start marketing. So we teach this to all of our students, the concept of beta clients. So you go out and you find a handful, one, two, three, there's no really cap on how many you can work with. I approached three beta clients and I ended up shooting for two of them. And the concept of the beta client is I'm going to ask you, can I shoot for you? Because I believe I can offer you some kind of value, right? Like there's maybe you just added a new team member and you guys need some new working photos together, or, maybe all of your photographs on your website are like selfies or iPhone photos. And I think I can help you up level. Like what kind of value can you offer them? And then you take them through the actual like proven process of you do the consult call, you have them sign the contract. Even if the sum is zero, you don't have to offer it for zero. You can do it for a discounted price if you want to. But the whole concept of the beta session is you hand pick one, two, three, whatever business owners that you want to photograph because you think you can offer them something. And because you're offering your services either at a discounted price or for free, it gives you a lot more creative control to influence the shoot and take it in the direction that you want to go. Those photographs should still serve the business owner. So like they should be done with the business owner's goals in mind, their brand in mind, but like being a beta client, like when I took on beta clients, I did not charge them. And one of my beta clients is a makeup artist. She's also a YouTuber. And so I approached her, explained, here's what I want to do. Here's what I'm offering you. Do not use the word free. Do not use the word free. Free means cheap. But I'd love to offer you this 2-3 hour session. And as a thank you for your time, I would love to provide you with the high resolution files for you to use on your, you know, whatever. And though, because she wasn't paying me, I felt free to say, hey, these photos that you sent me of your house, I don't think these are going to work. I would really love for us to look at renting a studio. Is this one that you would be comfortable? Maybe she found it, but it was a studio that charged like, I don't know, $300-$500 an hour, but she wasn't paying me. And so I felt much more comfortable to say, I would like for you to rent something that looks like this. And she was more willing to do it to make the most out of the investment. So, and by the way, like you don't have to tell people that these are beta clients. Like you can just shoot them and then put them in your portfolio. But then the trick is not just shooting beta client sessions. It's then social selling those beta clients along the way. So like, you don't have to wait until you've photographed and delivered the shoot in order to start marketing yourself as a brand photographer. You could literally close this podcast episode, go book a beta session and start talking about it on social media 3 minutes later, like talking about your process, talking about how excited you are for the shoot. You're in the beginning stages of planning. You don't have to tell people again that it's a beta session, but like talk about this client and how excited you are to serve them. Because what that begins to do is introduce the idea of you as a brand photographer into the mind of your existing audience, which then like slowly builds your authority and demonstrates your expertise and begins to cultivate this brand message that like, hey, I photograph brand sessions now. I did that with our beta clients. And we ended up booking one of my favorite dream clients before we ever officially launched our offer, simply because I was talking about the process along the way.
That felt like a masterclass right there, like a step-by-step process of how to get started in this thing. Abby, I really appreciate you sharing everything that you have today. I mean, it's clearly it's clear that you're very knowledgeable about brand photography. And I'm sure that there are going to be listeners right now who are thinking to themselves, how do I learn more about this? How do I go deeper into brand photography? So before I let you go, can you share where listeners can find more about you and more about branding photography online?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Abby Grace Photo. And then if you're interested in learning more about what we offer for our brand photography students, you can go to abbygrace.co. And there's all the details there on our course, Brand Photography Academy. We also have our shop. If you want to go to abbygracephotography.com, there are some resources like we have our pre-shoot questionnaire. I think we have the consult roadmap there, like smaller bite-sized pieces to help you get started if you're like not quite sure this is exactly what you want to do.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with a friend. Start a conversation. Grow together. That is it for this week. Remember, the more that you shoot today, the better of a photographer you will be tomorrow. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.